Q-U-D-A-C-Y.
Type that into your app search, then download Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
No, I was told by people that he was ready to go, full go. They're going to have to, you know, ramp him up, which they should be doing. But yeah, I would say just in from 10,000 feet, that Stephon Diggs, 9 months after tearing his ACL, 8 months after surgery, that he is fully go on day one of Patriots training camp. It's pretty stunning to me. He must be a freak, because to be ready like this and at his age, not many people can do that.
That was Greg Bedard on Steph Diggs. Way ahead of schedule. That's one I'll take the L on. I didn't want to sign Diggs because I thought he might be out for half the year, or at least miss the first month just based on the timeline. From his injury a year ago, getting hurt in the middle of the season. This happened to Kendrick Bourne the year before that. Bourne didn't play in the first handful of games. I thought it'd be a similar situation. Wrong. Take the loss there, because Diggs back out there again today. Diggs was leading the team through everything these last 2 days. So certainly a wild turnaround for him. I have more bad news.
I don't want more bad news, Jones. Give me some good news.
Well, I already told you Steph Diggs, I thought, was talking to Andy Hart down there. They're going to talk to Pop Douglas instead.
Yeah.
But bad news for Hart. I thought he was doing a one-on-one with Morgan Moses after that. I'm like, oh, cool. Well, now he's talking to Morgan. I saw another visor down there.
Yeah.
It turns out that was Mike Reese.
That was Mike Reese.
So I don't know how Hart feels about me thinking
he looks a little, he's same he looks stature very as Mike Reese.
Correct. I'm like, well, it's a visor and a short little bro.
Yeah.
That's got to be Andy Hart. And then Terp's like, no, I just walked out with Hart. That's Reese. I was like, oh, my.
Did Reese do the interview on Moses' shoulder? He's like, let me hold you like this. Get you in one shot.
So bad news for Andy Hart. I'm now confusing him with Mike Reese.
That's
down
a tough
there,
go.
Which is just a that's real tough go. As Bedard said, looking at it from 10,000 feet, that's about where we're looking at it from here. But I got to get some binoculars, Keith. I thought I was trusting my eyesight, but
that's a dangerous game.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a dangerous game. Yeah, the eyesight is, they'll play tricks on you.
It will. Stuff. It will indeed.
You're getting numbers wrong. You're getting reporters wrong.
Here's,
yeah, like maybe lay low on some of this stuff.
Here's one thing I can say, and maybe I shouldn't trust my eyes now on this. I can say Diggs has looked pretty good from what we've seen when he's
I agree with that. I think that is pretty much the consensus. You know, we see him lead all these position drills, and he's out in front, and then you watch everybody else go, and you're like, all right, he does that better than everybody else. And then at some of the 11-on-11s, he's been pretty productive. And Drake May is looking his way, as he should. And so, yeah, the number one takeaway positive from the 2 days of training camp has been Steph Diggs, health and performance.
I see Efton Chisholm jogging off the field, Keith.
Are you sure that's him?
I'm pretty sure. 86? I hope. He's jogging off the field.
Yeah. Looks
you,
good.
Well, have you noticed him again?
I have not.
This is what I was going to say. Like, yeah. I have not.
No.
I mean, he hasn't stood out much in any. We saw one catch yesterday in team drills. So, like, this is a guy who we heard his name a lot at, yeah. Was it minicamp or OTAs? I'm trying to remember which.
It was definitely OTAs.
His
maybe,
name
maybe
came
both.
Up a lot. It doesn't mean he's not doing anything. But
Vrabel spoke very highly of
him. Yeah, and so did May. May's like, he caught like a million passes out there.
Yeah.
I haven't noticed much, if we're being honest. That doesn't mean he's not doing anything, but I haven't noticed much out of him while he's jogging off the field. But
the same can be said for Baker. The same can be said for, obviously, Polk's not even out there. Booty at least had one catch.
Booty was a little more involved today than yesterday, for sure.
But, you know, receivers 4, 5, and 6 on the roster, if they end up keeping 6, that's wide open. It's wide open right now. And also with Mac Hollins not being available, that leaves a spot potentially open. Because it feels like, I mean, Diggs, Kyle Williams, and Pop Douglas – are on the team in my mind. And then after that, it's kind of a up for grabs situation.
Right. And if Hollins is active, he's on the team as well. If
right.
he starts on PUP or remains on PUP, he's on there now. But if he remains on PUP, then that would be one extra spot for one of those guys to make the squad. But yeah, that next group has not differentiated in any way. It's only 2 days of camp, but that would be the takeaway thus far. I asked you this earlier. I thought day one of camp, it was harder to read into today, but I thought day one of camp, good day for Diggs. Which made it, to me, a good day for the receiver group. Kyle Williams had a good day yesterday, not as much today, with a drop, catch, and punt. The O-line maybe had a slightly better day today than they did yesterday. Bedard very critical of it yesterday, less so today. You know, Callahan was detailing all the pressure that May was under. That's what it looked like to me. I would still take that as a net positive at the end of the day. If they come out of it with Diggs looking like a legit number one and some questions about the O-line, I would rather that than the other way around, where the offensive line looks lights out, but Diggs doesn't look like he's fully out there,
right,
or doesn't right. fully look like himself, or isn't even participating. Like, I'd rather that. So if it's an either or, I got to take one or the other. It'd be great if both look good.
Yeah.
I feel better for Drake May if Diggs and the receiver group are arrow up as opposed to the O-line.
Yeah, I agree with that, because there hasn't been a number one receiver on the Patriots in over half a decade, and you're looking for one, you're desperate for one. Also for the young quarterback, you're so desperate because you hope that whether it's McDaniels or the offensive line coach or whatever, like, they can figure out a way to make it just good enough. Whereas with the receiver, you can only do so much, right? Like, if you don't have that top end talent, you saw it last year at times. It's like, all right, your top guys are Kayshon Booty and Pop Douglas. What are you really going to get out of that offense? So Steph Diggs, looking like he's certainly trending towards playing week one, being effective week one, having a good season, that's great. You know, the offensive line, I feel like, is going to get jumbled up a little bit. They're probably going to move some guys around and try to find the right five for them. But no, the thing I wanted to see the most was, in fact, Steph Diggs and what he looked like. And so far, so good.
Right. Like, we were going through the current list the other day of players under the most pressure. I wouldn't say he's under the most pressure or has the most at stake, but he's the guy I was the most curious to see. How's he look? Where's he lining up? Meaning, like, is he first through the drills? Not where does he line up in team stuff, but just, like, is he leading?
Well, he's one of the most important. I don't think there's pressure on him in the sense that he's had a great career. This is what we had this argument before about who needs who more. Do the Patriots need Diggs more? Does Diggs need the Patriots more? I think the Patriots need Diggs way more. And you could argue, like, Diggs could go maybe somewhere else or whatever, but he's made a lot of money in his career. He's caught a ton of yards. He's had a great career. Patriots don't really have a fallback plan. Like, if he can't go, I'm not really sure where they're going to turn.
Kyle Williams is your one.
Yeah.
Pop Douglas is your one.
Good. That's why I think on offense, and maybe even the whole team, it's Drake May, Steph Diggs, Will Campbell as the most important guys. They play three of the most, maybe the three most important positions, in certainly on offense. And if those guys are looking good, then this team, maybe this offense won't be bad. Oh, I had a list. Did you get this list sent to you too, where it was another one of these over-unders for the season, and it was points per game. Did you see this one?
For the Pats? No.
For every team in the NFL.
Okay, I had not seen this.
And so they basically predict how many season points you're going to score.
BetOnline?
Correct. BetOnline.eg. And so, for example, they think the Buffalo Bills will score the most points.
What is that per game?
26.9.
Okay, I was going to guess like 25. 26.9, so higher than I thought.
The Patriots are tied with three other teams at 22.9.
Oh, that's not bad.
Outside the top 20.
Okay, so outside the top 20.
Yes.
What they average last year? I'll look that up.
Oh, good question.
While you're going through.
But basically, they are, according to this metric anyway,
they couldn't have averaged even close to 22 a game last year.
Yeah, probably not. They have four teams on here that their over-under is under 20 points.
Yep.
Browns, Giants, Saints, Jets. Do those teams sound familiar? They should, because they're on the Patriots schedule.
Because they are all there this year.
Pats are tied with the Falcons, Jaguars, and Seahawks for offense.
Okay, Pats a year ago were 17 a game, 30th in the league, ahead of the Giants and the Browns. That's it. So that's progress.
Yeah. So I guess my question for you would be, will they be a top 20 offense?
I mean, I hope so. So, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think they should be, right?
See, I think their defense could be top 10. I think their offense
could be middle of the pack.
Should be. Yeah. If they're 16, you'll take it.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I mean, it's still bizarre that Josh McDaniels in 2021 had Mac Jones as the seventh highest scoring team in football.
It's true.
So, if you have that as sort of a metric, then they probably should be able to get there. Teams that are expected to have fewer points per game, in addition to that bottom four, were also the Steelers, mm-hmm. Panthers, Colts, Raiders. It's basically the Patriots schedule.
Yeah,
are the teams below them.
Yeah, so it's just, I mean, they have so many games they're favored in, winnable games. That's just another way of illustrating it. But okay, 22 a game, the number sounds really good to me.
It's 23 even, 22.9.
So six more points a game than what they averaged last year. That's still only 22nd in the league.
Yeah.
But they should be top 20, I would say that. Vrabel's still making his way off the field. Anything jumped out with you with Vrabel? There's one thing that jumped out to me. Again, I don't have a lot to compare it to.
With Vrabel today?
Other than like a million years ago when I was here for Belichick training camp.
He was playing safety at one point?
He's like lining up and like he's a player.
Yeah.
Now, maybe Mayo did some of that last year. I don't know. You know, that'd be a question, I guess, for Gresh and Fourier. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't here. But did you see any of that last year, Billy?
Did Mayo
like lining up and involved and, you know?
Nothing that jumped out to me.
Okay. So, I mean, look, it's hard to really read too much into Vrabel's overall impact 2 days into training camp, but that's noticeable. He's out there mixing it up with all these guys.
Yeah, because remember there was the story during the pre-draft workout. Didn't Will Campbell knock him down?
Yep, threw him on his ass.
That was like a whole thing, so that was pretty fun. But this one is, I mean, that's what he likes to do. Yeah, that's obviously going to be different than Belichick, but it should be different than Belichick. Vrabel was a player. So if he feels like getting out there a little bit and doing some of the drills, then so be it. But yeah, he didn't speak today. Is he back tomorrow?
He's tomorrow. Yeah, I'm not sure the time.
Yeah.
But he is – I don't think it's during our show tomorrow. I think it's before, but yeah. I'll double-check that. But Vrabel just making his way off the field here as day two wraps up. It did seem like at least a slight improvement for the offensive line. Too hard to read into all of that too much until we have pads on, which sounds like it's going to be on Monday. Yesterday, though, it did sound like a rough day for Will Campbell, a lot of mixing and matching on the offensive line. So that's certainly something to monitor. As we hang out here at training camp all week long, Jones and Keefe high above the fields at Gillette Stadium. We'll be here for day three tomorrow as well. Brought to you by McFarland Energy. Coming up next, sad news today. In what's been a sad week, it was Malcolm Jamal Warner, it was Ozzy Osbourne, and now it's Hulk Hogan. We will pay tribute in Kiefer Madness coming up next.
Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
It's time for Kiefer Madness.
Kiefer Madness.
Richard Keefe, I think it is. Rich Keefe.
Who is that?
How you doing, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Joshua Adams.
What now?
It's Kiefer Madness.
Where's Keefe?
Where is he?
Where's Keefe?
Where is Keefe?
Hey, Keefe, you're a dude.
I was doing Junko Inoshima from Danganronpa.
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch.
That's funny.
Yo, Kiefer Madness is so hit or miss.
Keefe's a nice guy.
Keefe's a nice guy.
Okay. Kiefer Madness?
It's Kiefer Madness on WEEI.
I bring it.
Well, the first thing you gotta realize, brother, is this right here is the future of wrestling. You can call this the new world order of wrestling, brother. These two men right here came from a great big organization up north, and everybody was wondering who the third man was. Well, who knows more about that organization than me, brother? Well, let me tell you something. I made that organization a monster. I made people rich up there. I made the people that ran that organization rich up there, brother. And when it all came to pass, the name Hulk Hogan, the man Hulk Hogan, got bigger than the whole organization, brother. And then billionaire Ted, amigo, he wanted to talk turkey with Hulk Hogan. Well, billionaire Ted promised me movies, brother. Billionaire Ted promised me millions of dollars. And billionaire Ted promised me world caliber matches. And as far as billionaire Ted goes, Eric Bischoff and the whole WCW goes, I'm bored, brother.
That, of course, the voice of Hulk Hogan, who is now delivering promos in the sky, passed away earlier today, Jones, at the age of 71, maybe the most famous wrestler of all time, a real crossover star, dominated the 80s. I don't think it's even a debate. One of the most famous people of the 80s was Hulk Hogan. He carried it. Really, even up until this year, he'd still pop up occasionally in wrestling, and his name kind of rings out every time he shows up. It was a big deal. Now, the crowd started to turn on him, admittedly, towards the end here, but he had a great run in the 90s, including that promo where he turned heel, which is still the best heel turn.
So who is he? Who's
of all time?
Who's he yelling about? Who's billionaire Ted? Ted Turner?
Ted Turner was the owner of WCW, and they wanted to have a rival to WWF. And so, obviously, Hulk Hogan had a long career in the WWF. He left. He was doing some movies and things like that. Then he joined up with WCW, and he was still always a good guy. And then, eventually, he joined
Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and they formed the NWO, which is one of the great heel factions of all time. So at the age of 71, Hulk Hogan passed away today. He is survived by his third wife, Sky Daly. Her name is Sky Daly.
I'm not familiar with no, that's not. No. What was the wife's name on?
Linda.
Linda was his first wife.
Then he had another wife after that, and then he had.
So Linda was the one from Hogan Knows Best.
Hogan
that's
Knows
the one
Best.
I would know. Okay.
You would know.
That was the first wife.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. He is a six-time WWE champion. He's a one-time tag team champion. He's a six-time WCW World Heavyweight Champion. Also a two-time Royal Rumble winner.
Wow. Now, where do you get all these wrestling reference? Where do you get where
top of the head?
Oh, this is all right off the top of the
top of the
and
head.
Wikipedia.
And nice. Wikipedia.org. Oh, has some of this information.
They track all that on Wikipedia.
Yeah, a little bit.
God, okay. Yeah,
a little bit. But he was the guy. And as Billy was saying earlier, like he was not a great wrestler. This is not the day to poke that or point that out.
No, Keith.
I'm letting the audience know. I'm also aware he was not a great wrestler, but he had it. He had the it factor. He was very charismatic. There's something about Vince McMahon loved a jacked wrestler, like a larger. He said, when you go to see wrestling, you should see something you can't just see walking down the street.
Sure.
So you would get a guy built like a Greek god, and there he would be in the middle of the ring, just flexing, showing off the pythons. What was it, 24-inch pythons? 24-inch pythons.
Nice.
He'd pose. He was always bald, which was always jarring to me as a kid. Because he'd come to the ring in the bandana.
Yep.
He had the handlebar mustache.
Sure.
He's walking out there with the booty. He's pointing at the opponent. I'm going to go get you, brother. And then he'd take the bandana off. Super bald. He had, like, longer, kind of thinning
hair. Yeah,
well,
hair. Some of it was hanging on.
Some, like, around the back.
Yeah, he had the Ally of Frady going on. Yeah.
It was a wild haircut. Yeah. And then he'd go in there. He'd give you, he'd boot you down. And then he'd give you a leg drop. His finishing move was a leg drop. That's
he hulked
it.
Up. You know, you would
he would also Hulk up. Thank
he
you,
would
Bill.
Shake,
he would
shake
he
around
would,
and Hulk up. And
he would, he would Hulk up a little bit, and he was the champion. And they
what
would
kind
just
of was that like a sugar. He's got like a real sugar rush.
Yeah,
like,
I'll get that's what it was.
Yeah.
Sugar.
Yeah.
In the 80s, he would take a cold brew coffee. You'd drink that real fast, and then you just couldn't stop.
He's caffeinated. Yeah,
the guy was an absolute
like
maniac.
Popeye with spinach.
I have his top five Hulk Hogan matches, according to me.
Oh, according to one Rich Keith.
According to me.
All right, let's hear Billy grade these.
Feel free, Bill. There might be some
5-1. You go 1-5.
I'm going 5-1.
All right,
I'm going to go 5-1. Of course, number five, SummerSlam 2005. A little bit of an older Hulk Hogan taking on Shawn Michaels, who the two of them had real heat. They had real backstage heat. And if you go and watch this match now, Shawn Michaels oversells every single move. So Hogan gives him like a chop. He acts like he's getting killed. It's like the whole match is like, oh, but it's kind of comical.
Really?
Yeah, but Hulk Hogan, Shawn Michaels, two of the best wrestlers of all time. Also, when the WCW and WWF eventually merged together, Vince McMahon bought WCW. He literally bought his competition. They started to merge some of the wrestlers. They kind of fumbled the storylines there. But long story short, WrestleMania 18, Hulk Hogan versus The Rock. Maybe one of the best in-ring moments of all time, just the two of them.
Four, huh?
I got a number four, but you're going to like the next three,
I think,
Bill.
They must be good, huh, Billy?
They better be good.
It's Hogan matches.
They better be.
Okay.
But this was an all-timer, just the two of them in the ring, and the crowd's going insane. They're going back and forth, and like they sort of switch sides. Like they went into it, Hogan was the bad guy, Rock was the good guy, but within the match, they kind of like switched.
Lines were blurred.
Yeah, it's an all-time wrestling moment.
Okay.
Number three. Hulk Hogan versus Macho Man Randy Savage at WrestleMania 5.
Don't hate that one. Well, I mean, I hated it because I was a Macho Man fan.
Yeah, well.
So it bothered me when Hogan had to win that one.
And as Macho Man would say about Hulk, he had lust in his eyes.
For Miss Elizabeth.
For Miss Elizabeth. Miss Elizabeth, a little love triangle.
See, what was even wild is, like, there was the storyline of that, but then there was, like, rumors that there was, like, actual, stuff going on behind the scenes.
I would probably say all bets are off.
Kind of stuff? Maybe another day to talk about that.
Today's not the day for that.
Okay.
Miss Elizabeth and Macho and Hulk can figure that out in the sky right now. Number two on the list, another match he could have in heaven, Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6.
That's another big match. Again, not rooting for Hogan in that one either.
Again, not a great wrestling match.
No, these guys are two meatheads.
These are moments.
Yes, moments. Thank you. These are wrestling. He's really in the center of all these moments. I loved Ultimate Warrior as a kid. He was even a worse wrestler than Hogan.
So sloppy, so jaw. Like they were just two. This was just two action figures wrestling.
Yes, correct.
Literally, when you were a kid wrestling with them and just smashing them together. That match was
okay. But Ultimate Warrior had face paint. Hogan didn't. So as a kid, I'm like, give me the face paint.
And it was bands around the arms
and the tassels. When he had the pink and the green tassels, amazing. Ultimate Warrior won this match, but Hogan even talks about it. He's like, as he's leaving the ring, he's like, he could tell people were like already like, oh, we should probably go back to Hogan. Right. Like, they're like, that's all he had. And then this one, maybe not the greatest match of all time, but maybe the most iconic match of all time, WrestleMania 3.
Yep.
Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant.
Yep, not going to argue it again. Once again, not a great match, no. But just for what it meant for the business, it's easily the number one match.
He picked up Andre the Giant, kind of scoop slammed him, because in the early days, WrestleMania was like not a sure thing. They had WrestleMania 1 and 2. Hogan was at the center of those. But WrestleMania 3, that's the one in Detroit at the Pontiac Silverdome. They have like the huge crowd, and the signature moment is Hogan versus Andre.
Right. Well, that's what they had to do because they were like, all right, we're going big this one. Yeah. This is kind of like they're all or nothing pay-per-view.
Yep.
So they thought by making Andre a bad guy, because he was never a bad guy before, to go against Hogan would be the perfect way to do it. And they got, you know, the numbers skewed. I don't know what the exact attendance was, but they'll tell you it's 96,000 people with it.
Yeah. Hogan also, according to
you, but you like that list, Billy. Those checked out. You were
yeah. I thought I have no issue with the list. I thought the Hogan Rock one was a little low, but I agree with all five of them.
A couple of the awards that he won from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter: he won Feud of the Year 1986 against Paul Orndorff.
Nice, Paul Orndorff,
Mr. Wonderful.
Okay.
Also, Feud of the Year is a member of the NWO versus all of WCW 1996. So 10 years apart, Feud of the Year. He also won Best Babyface.
Oh.
From 1982 through 1991.
Wow.
Right, 10 straight years.
And he became a bad guy, 4 years later?
He was like Jim Cobb with gold gloves. He was just every year, just handed out.
Consistent. Now, I hate to
Bergeron with the Selke.
That's true.
Yeah.
I hate to point this out, but he did win most overrated in 85, 86, 94, 95, 96, 97, and 98.
Who votes on this? Other wrestlers?
No, Wrestler Observer Newsletter. That's what's his name.
Meltzer?
The media?
Dave Meltzer, friend of the show. Okay. Dave Meltzer.
That was a lot of overrated wrestlers. Yeah.
He took home worst wrestler in 97, worst interview in 95.
Oh, boy.
Worst feud of the year against Billy Kidman in 2000.
Worst feud of the year?
Worst feud versus the Dungeon of Doom in 95. Worst feud of the year in 91 against Sergeant Slaughter. In 98 against The Warrior, who at that time couldn't be referred to as the Ultimate Warrior.
Just The Warrior.
Because they owned his rights.
Right. How that many? Was when, like, what was that? Would you say 91 with Sergeant Slaughter?
Yeah.
That was when Sergeant Slaughter turned on America.
Yeah, right. So I was definitely on Hogan's side then.
So two best feuds and how many worst feuds? Is
it looks
four?
Like four, yeah. Okay. For the worst feuds.
You don't want to highlight these, but it's just, this is history.
He also had the worst match of 87, 96, 97, and 98.
Yikes.
Again, that's just according to the wrestling.
Who it was against?
Yeah. 87 against Andre. Oh, no. Yeah, the Andre the Giant one that I mentioned.
Okay.
They said it's the worst worked match.
Yeah, yeah.
96, it was a with Randy Savage versus Arn Anderson, Mang, The Barbarian, Ric Flair, Kevin Sullivan, Z Gangsta.
What a match.
And The Ultimate Solution in a Towers of Doom match.
No idea.
Also against Roddy Piper at Super Brawl, what is that, 7? And then against The Warrior at Halloween Havoc, which is an all-timer. So 98.
All-timer, all-time bad.
All-time bad. Like, there's like, he tries, like, blowing fire in his face.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
But he, like, blows it up in his own face.
Yeah, like burning fireball in his hand.
He'd be like a fireball. Like, that's, like, the most botched.
He was, like, turned around, like, trying to get the thing. You ignite it. I don't know how you ignite it.
Oh,
but then when he threw it, it kind of just blew up in his own face.
It was a mess. I also have quickly his top 10 movies of all time.
Oh!
Yeah, Hulk Hogan's top 10 movies.
10 to 1 or 1 to 10?
I'll go 1 to 10. I think there's a little bit more. It's obvious what number one is. So rather than, you know, I'll end with the Whopper. Number one would be Rocky 3.
Yep.
Thunderlips.
Yep.
Great.
Number two, Gremlins 2, The New Batch, where he portrayed Hulk Hogan.
Oh, he played himself. Okay.
Yep, cameos himself. Number three, No Holds Barred.
Okay.
Number four, Muppets from Space.
Played himself again?
Yes, right.
Okay.
Number five, Mr. Nanny.
Oh, that one I saw.
Classic.
Basically played himself.
Yep. Yeah. Number six, Suburban Commando.
Yeah, him and Christopher Lloyd.
Yep. That's
okay,
a good one.
I missed that one.
Number seven, Thunder in Paradise.
Oh, they had a movie of that. I knew there was a TV show of it. They made a movie.
They did a movie, and then they ended up calling the second show on WCW Thunder. Remember they did Thursday Night Thunder? Number eight on the Hulk Hogan movie list, Three Ninjas, High Noon at Mega Mountain.
Whew.
He was in that one.
What number was that?
Number eight.
I don't know. What number Three Ninjas was that?
Oh, for Hogan, it was number eight. I mean, I don't know what number it was for Three Ninjas.
I don't know the series.
Spy Hard.
Spy Hard.
Number nine.
Spy Hard, I saw like that. Leslie Nielsen?
Yeah, I think so. And then number 10, Santa with Muscles. That was the name of the film.
Sounds like
you can guess which character he portrayed. So there you go, Hulk Hogan, a wrestling legend.
And the man had range.
Yeah, no doubt.
And again, a
Jones, as you mentioned, also like Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah.
Reality
I'm
TV
telling you,
star.
I watched the crap out of Hogan Knows Best. Yep. I watched a ton of the Osbournes. Like that, for me,
yeah.
Those are, you know, really more how I know those guys than, you know, their wrestling or music career.
Yep.
Which I guess says a lot about me.
True, it really does.
But yeah, that's my knowledge. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a versatile career for another giant. I mean, really, genuinely, another giant.
Yeah, he was.
So a sad week around here. Malcolm Jamal Warner, Ozzy Osbourne, and now Hulk Hogan, paying tribute to the late, great Hulk Hogan here.
Let that be enough.
In Kiefer Madness.
Let that be enough.
Well, they say the news comes in threes. Good news, bad news.
Not fours, right?
I hope not.
Okay.
I would hope not.
All right.
So hopefully we're at the end of that there here on Jones and Keith. That's your Kiefer Madness every Tuesday, most Thursdays here on WEEI. We'll get back to your phone call, 617-779-7937. Let's get back to the Red Sox as well, quite possibly. Their wildest win of the year. How does it impact their thought process at the deadline? We'll get to that with all your phone calls next.